So Psalm 127, which is on page 622 of the Church Bibles. Unless the Lord builds the house, those who build it labour in vain. Unless the Lord watches over the city, the watchman stays awake in vain. It is in vain that you rise up early and go late to rest, eating the bread of anxious toil, for he gives sleep to his beloved. Behold, children are a heritage from the Lord, the fruit of the womb is a reward. Like an arrow from the hand of a warrior are the children of one's youth. Blessed is the man who fills his quiver with them. He shall not be put to shame when he speaks with his enemies in the gate.
Thanks, Rob. It's good to see you all.
Great to see if you've been away at Keswick this week. I know some of the young folks have. And I know you had a fantastic time there. And others have been away at various other camps already as well this summer. And great to welcome you again if you are visiting us or here for the first time tonight. Earlier on, SCUA, they stood in front of us and very bravely told their stories. And it was a bit of a nerve-wracking experience for them. There were moments when they felt a little bit anxious. So we're going to kind of join with them. I'm going to ask you to turn and not talk to everybody, but turn to the person next to you, or people sitting next to you, introduce yourself if you need to, and ask, what sort of things make you anxious in life? And then they'll know they're not the only ones, all right, when we have a bit of feedback in a moment. Yeah? All right, should we do that for them? And it is relevant to what we're looking at in the Psalm as well. It's not irrelevant. Just say hello and talk about the things that make you particularly anxious. Okay, let's just engage again with one another more publicly. Anyone who throw in their contribution and say the sort of things that you find nerve-wracking, make you anxious, make you concerned? David, yeah? Role play. Yeah, I can relate to that too. You're sitting next to the person who, and you make people do role play, don't you? Yeah, I've done. Great. Other things, what does anyone else want to contribute?
Interviews.
Yeah, role play interviews.
Talking to the person next to you.
Excellent. Steve, you agreed with that as well, did you? Being asked to talk in public, like now. What other things? Sorry, over here, yeah?
Deadlines.
Someone else said something over there. Flying in aeroplanes. Thank you for that, the way back there. Yeah. What else?
Being a very young grandfather.
Bernard became a grandfather the second time on Friday. Yay!
Pretty girls.
Thanks for the tape. That's Andy Harvey. good stuff. A lot of things make us nervous. The world is full of anxious people. Anxious what other people think of them. That might be where young people are at, and older folks. Anxious about our studies, anxious about our results, anxious about the future, if we're unemployed in particular, anxious to impress the boss, anxious about losing a customer, losing a number of customers, anxious about finishing a report, someone mentioned deadlines. Anxious about the team's performance, not the football team, but you work with the team at work and you might be anxious about them. You might lead the team and be anxious about the team's performance. Anxious about an unwise investment, anxious about a lump or a pain in the chest that seems to have appeared. Anxious when we spend lots of time and energy building something up, anything. We just give a lot of energy because it's important. We get anxious about it. Anxious about the security of whatever that is that we've given so much energy to building up. Worried about, what might happen to it? You know, can we look after it? Who will look after it? Anxious about our family. Anxious perhaps about getting married, about like John and Sarah might be a bit anxious at the moment. They're anxious about getting the house ready, and they've asked me to ask you, if anyone can volunteer this week, to help them paint their house. That'll help someone stop being anxious. You know, John, raise your hand so other people can see. That's John there. If you want to help paint his house this week, have a word with him at the end. He's anxious about that and needs to get it sorted. Parents anxious about our children. Children anxious about parents. Children in the middle between parents and their own children being anxious both ways. the stretch in the middle. Some here are going through that and it's not comfortable. Well, this psalm, look at the beginning of it, a song of ascent of Solomon. King Solomon wrote it, and he knew the stresses of building stuff. All right? He built a magnificent temple. You know, it's all about building buildings. Nathan and I went down to the Welsh Assembly this week to have a look at it because the architect, the developer who were looking at helping us said, go there, some great ideas there that which may help you. We've gone and we've seen and we think, fantastic, if they can reproduce that, we're well away. But I might get worried because it might not happen. Well, Solomon knew all about building buildings. He knew all about building a family. He had a huge family. Too big, in fact. Too many wives. Kind of like 899 too many. And he built and led a nation. This song is a song of wisdom. A song of wisdom from his own experience. Years later, I've no doubt at all that people like Ezra and Nehemiah, who came back, Israel was thrown into exile. Guys like Ezra and Nehemiah came back rebuilding Jerusalem, rebuilding the temple, rebuilding the nation. And I reckon Ezra and Nehemiah and all their mates found this psalm, this song, this poem very, very helpful indeed. If you're taking notes, it's a great thing to take notes. Helps you remember stuff, helps you not to forget. Nehemiah chapter 6 and 7. If you have a read of Nehemiah chapter 6 and the first part of chapter 7, this psalm would quite easily snugly fit in there. And the experience of rebuilding Jerusalem. So we're listening to a guy who knew all about what we know and experience. He speaks God through his word. His spirit breathes out his word through men like Solomon. We're hearing, listening into the heartbeat of God who understands us. Who understands you and me and our anxiousness and the things that concern us. The psalm, the poem, the song sets before us a choice. A choice between, well, firstly, anxious independence. All right, that's the first choice that's laid before us. Anxious independence. One reason that we work is, quite simply, in order to eat. If you don't work, no bread on the table. We work in order to eat. But work can often be the area of our lives which is filled with anxiety. We get worried about the team. We get worried about deadlines. We get worried about the income. We get worried, well, actually, we might get laid off. We have been laid off. We're worried about the future because there's no job. All sorts of things about work are really integral to our worries and our anxiety. Why is that? Well, work can be filled with anxiety. That's exactly what verse 2 says, isn't it? That little section there, eating the bread, that is, eating the product of what? Anxious toil, anxious work. You know, work biting your fingernails. Why do we get anxious about work? Well, let me give you some suggestions as to why we get anxious about work. You may not have thought of these as suggestions and ways that you get anxious. Then I guess what I want to do is to try and convince you, in actual fact, this is the reason the Bible would want to tell you that you're anxious. So something to listen into if you've not thought of it before. And say, oh, perhaps the Bible's right after all. Well, sometimes we get anxious because of what we can call arrogant independence from God. Arrogant independence from God leads to anxiety. Let me explain. See, we work hard. We work very hard indeed. But because we're ignoring God, there's a doubt in the back of our minds that goes something like this. Maybe I won't be able to finish the project. God may not be in it. He may end it. Then it would have all been in vain. So we get all anxious. Well, that was what was experienced when folks built the Tower of Babel. Some of you remember, others you may not have read the story, it's Genesis chapter 11. Think back, they built this huge, great, big building, a house, a tower, right trying to reach God. They rejected God. In fact, they chose to compete with God. And God brought their plans to a shuddering stop. All their work had been in vain. It led absolutely nowhere. It was an arrogance. Independence from God, and that can be a sneaking thing that comes into our minds and our hearts. We realize, actually, God may not be in this. And I'm concerned that I may not be able to finish it. He might end it and close it all down. Sometimes our anxiety might be due to what we might call subtle independence. Not arrogance independence, subtle independence. You see, we may finish the project. It may all get done. It may look great now. But because we've ignored God, maybe not as openly as we might have done, maybe not as arrogantly, but nevertheless, we've not built with him in mind, there's a nagging doubt. It might look good now, but will it stand the ultimate test? You know, what will it look like when I face God as judge? Like the foolish man who built, in Jesus' story, his house on sand. Rather than on Jesus, it crashed down in the flood of God's judgment. All his work, like the guys way back in Genesis chapter 11, building the Tower of Babel, was all in vain. All in vain. Or the rich farmer, in another of Jesus' stories, he looked so successful that he had to build bigger and bigger barns to store his wealth. But he had a heart attack that night and died. It was all in vain. All in vain. Vain is a key word that leads to anxiety. Look at verses 1 and 2. Unless the Lord builds the house, those who build it labour in vain. Unless the Lord watches over the city, the watchman stays awake in vain. It is in vain that you rise up early and go late to rest. Vain. Vanity. Apart from me, said Jesus, you can do nothing. That's what Jesus said in John chapter 15. No matter how hard we work to achieve anything, final success or failure depends upon the Lord, upon the Lord God. And so I want to suggest to us today that the rhythm, the beat of this song has got to, if I can put it this way, has got to be coming through on the iPod as we walk through our day-to-day lives. It's got to perhaps be the tune that we hum and sing as we use the hair straighteners, or whatever it is we do in the morning. It's got to be the melody that you whack the radio on, or in your car, you put in a CD, the MP3 or whatever it is. This has got to be the song that comes on your way to work. It's got to be there into the daily rhythm of life, because it confronts our lives head on. It's got to be there when we get home, and perhaps we're in the kitchen preparing the dinner. We lean over, we whack on some music. It's got to be the tune on the CD. It breathes an attitude that liberates us from anxiety. Learn it by heart, perhaps. That's a very practical suggestion. Learn it by heart. Meditate on it. That is, chew over it. Figure out what it means. Pray about it. And above all, be transformed by it. We need to be thinking in this sort of a way, if I can put it like this. If my best efforts in my career, business, in my study, in my marriage, in my family, in my walk with the Lord Jesus Christ, if we're just starting that, like with the baptisms earlier on, if all my best efforts are only in vain without God's special help, then success or failure lies with him and not me. And so the weight of final responsibility is lifted from me. It's a weight that I wasn't created to carry. I'm liberated to work to my best and not be stressed, if I can put it that way. Liberated to work to my best and not be stressed. Anxiety won't rob me of joy and peace, because I'm trusting God to do all the work. Lots of things make me worry in planning and launching and in leading Christchurch Central. And an Australian friend, Neil, many of you know him, he rebuked me. He rebuked me for presuming too much that the success or failure of Christchurch Central rested with me. It was a burden that I shouldn't be carrying, is what he said. It was robbing me of enjoying the ride. And he said to me, don't forget to enjoy the ride. Going back and reflecting on that. And I remember saying it to somebody else about a year ago. Yeah, don't forget to enjoy the ride. Because in actual fact, we can enjoy the ride, because we know that God is sovereign. We can work hard and have the stress of anxiety lifted from us. Because he's in control, not me. I can be joyful about it. It's also the best antidote. I mean, if some of us here will be leaders already in work. Others of us here are on our way to significant leadership in work. And you may well hear as you go through life about the loneliness of leadership. This psalm wonderfully pops that, doesn't it? You know, it's the best antidote to that little phrase, the loneliness of leadership. We're not the ultimate leader. God is. He's not going anywhere. We can trust him. The song's choice, anxious independence or peaceful dependence. That's the second, that's the next choice. The final phrase, look at verse 2 again. He, that is the Lord, gives to his beloved sleep. Alright, it's the opposite of the anxiety, the stress and the worry. He, the Lord, gives to his beloved sleep. That is, God helps us to sleep at night. But, as I understand it, that little phrase would be better translated in English if it read something like this. He, the Lord, gives to his beloved in his sleep. And some of you might have an NIV, a New International Version Bible at home, or you might have brought one to church today. If you look at the bottom in the NIV, the little thing, there's a little letter next to the little sentence in the psalm there. Look at the bottom. The NIV actually gives that alternative translation. It may be better read, he the Lord gives to his beloved in his sleep. That is, while you're sleeping, God is at work to bless you. While you're sleeping, God's at work to bless you. And that actually fits the context better. Verse 2 begins by saying, it's unwise to burn the candle at both ends. Do you do that? Do you find that you burn the candle at both ends? Getting up early, going to bed late, trying to do all this stuff that there is in life. Well, verse 2 starts by saying, that's a very unwise thing to do. But what's going to stop you doing that? Just the idea, God will give you sleep. And if someone's really wanting to work hard and very anxious and very worrying, then not a lot of things are going to stop them, stop them working. But this will. Knowing that God will bless them while they're sleeping, well, that knocks the old burning the candle at both ends on the head, doesn't it? Let me quote John Piper. He writes this, God can perform more good for those who trust him while they sleep than they can perform with anxious labour for themselves while awake. Isn't that great? Isn't that a wonderful thought? Just to, nurture in our minds and our hearts. Let me read also from Charles Spurgeon. Big old book, this. Not the sort of book that many others in my family would reach off the shelf and say, oh, I'll have a read of that story, Dad. That looks like a good one. The Treasury of David. It is actually fantastic. C.H. Spurgeon. And he says this on page 31 concerning this little verse in this psalm. Through faith, the Lord makes his chosen ones to rest in him in happy freedom from care. The text may mean that God gives blessing to his beloved in sleep, even as he gave Solomon the desire of his heart while he slept. Remember, while Solomon was sleeping, God came to him and said, what do you want? And he said, I want wisdom. God gave it to him while he slept. Isn't that amazing? That's the author of the psalm as well. The meaning is much the same. Those whom repose upon the bosom of the Lord, he rests them, blesses them while resting, blesses them more in resting than others in their moiling and toiling. That's a great little line, isn't it? Blesses them more than others in their moiling and in their toiling. God is sure to give the best thing to his beloved. And we hear that he gives them sleep. That is a laying aside of care, a forgetfulness of need, a quiet leaving of matters with God. This kind of sleep is better than the riches and honours. Note how Jesus slept amid the hurly-burly of a storm at sea. He knew that he was in his Father's hands, and therefore he was so quiet in spirit that the billows rocked him to sleep. It would be much oftener the same with us if we were more like him. Isn't that a great little quote? If you ever come across this book in a second-hand shop, or any of these, there are quite a few of them, Charles Spurgeon, on the Psalms, pick it up, buy them. Absolutely brilliant. Really good read. Have you ever wondered why you sleep? Let's just take a little break there for a moment. Talk to the person next to you again and ask, why do we sleep? Have you ever... Leave aside the fact, you know, Darwinianism and evolution and all that sort of stuff. It came from... So why hasn't evolution got us to the point where we don't need sleep yet? Perhaps that's a way you could put it. Or why didn't God make us, able to just get on 24/7, fresh as a daisy, without ever needing to have a kip? Why do we sleep? Have a little chat to the person next to you, unless you've already told them you're very nervous about this sort of stuff, in which case they're expecting you not to say anything. Yeah, okay? Go do it. Okay, anyone to throw in their ideas here? I've been asking my family over the last 24 hours, you know, why do you think we sleep? And no one's come up with an answer yet, really. So, why? Any ideas? Any thoughts? Bill, yeah. Thank you for that, Bill. Did you all hear that? Yeah, God made Adam sleep, and when he woke up, where's Adam? Whoa. Adam then wrote a poem. It's the first poem in the Bible, which is basically, wow. Bone of my bone, flesh of my flesh. She shall be called woman. Wow. Yeah. Other things. Other comments people to make? Mental and physical refreshment. Yeah, thank you. God could have designed that out, couldn't he? That's my question. Why didn't God design out, physical refreshment and mental refreshment, so that, ooh, wow, just go for it all the time. Up for it, 24/7. Yeah. Well, shut up, calm down, God can get on with doing it right. Yeah. I think that's actually where this psalm is coming from, down that line. Yeah. Yeah, sometimes subconsciously, our minds are always working, aren't they? Sorting things out even while we sleep. So, yeah, that's right. It's helpful. Good stuff, yeah. God leaves people in their dreams. Yeah, that's a fantastic answer. I hadn't thought of that one. Thanks, John. Yeah, Joseph, Daniel, Sheila. Yeah. In life. Paragraphs. End of chapter. End of book. Yeah, I think some of the thoughts here, Psalm 127, help as well as some of the wise things that have already been said. Psalm 127, it basically says that... For a third of our lives, we are basically blind, we are helpless, and we are unconscious. For one third of our lives, we are utterly and totally dependent upon God. We are utterly dependent on Him for our security, because we're not awake to defend ourselves. We're utterly dependent upon him to be doing and sorting all this stuff out in our lives because we're completely unconscious unless he intervenes by sending a dream. But we are utterly dependent on him as we sleep and as he blesses us. And we're dependent upon his blessing as we go through that. I think that's what's being said there in the other alternative interpretation of that little phrase there in verse 2. He gives to his beloved in his sleep. Dependent upon him. Trusting him. And so the question comes, are we anxiously independent of God? Or are we peacefully dependent on him? Well, one acid test is our sleep pattern. Are you resting each day in sleep? How are you sleeping? Yeah? How is it going at the moment? Have you ever been asked that before in a Bible talk or sermon? How's your sleep? It's one clue as to where your heart is and whether you're independently anxious from God or whether you're peacefully dependent upon him. I can go to bed. God can sort it out. I've done enough. I'm going to have a hot chocolate, a Horlicks, put my feet up, and have a snooze, have a kip. Resting each week through a day off, are you? When was the last time you had a proper Sabbath rest? You know, a holiday, holy day, holiday. When was the last time you actually took time out? On your own, with others, with God. Good questions, aren't they? Are we so anxious and independent, or are we really peacefully trusting God to be at work with us and for us? There are no laws in this matter. Please don't get me wrong. Don't misunderstand me. I'm not laying any laws here that, you know, from now on, become a member of Christ Church Central. It's going to be a new thing that you all have to be in bed by 9:30 at night, and we'll find a way of checking up on that. No, nothing like that at all. You may well find liberty and joy in a 12 or 13 or 14 hour day and really enjoy living with only 4 hours sleep at night, all right? Now, Margaret Thatcher did that. Right? She only had 4 hours sleep a night. That's, you know. But then again, we may well be kidding ourselves. The reality is we may be driven by anxiety, anxiously independent of God, thinking it's all down to me, rather than being peacefully dependent upon him, so resting and trusting him to be at work on my behalf, on our behalf. The song looks like it changes halfway through, and these are wonderful things to ponder on, and it looks like a change of gear, doesn't it? It's chapter, verse 1, verse 2, and then he looks like he's dropped third gear on the road, you know, as he shifts through to verse 3. It looks like a subject change. Verse 1 and 2 is about building a house. Verses 3 to 5 about a family. But no, there's actually some poetic wordplay going on, okay, which isn't straight away visible in the English. The word for house is the same as the word for family. So there's no change. It's an automatic gearbox. Keeps lifting through. From verse 2 to verse 3, it follows on. Still talking about the same thing. Remember David, King David, the father of the guy who wrote this psalm, one day said to God, God, I'll build you a house, that is a temple. He literally said, I'll build you a palace, I'll build you a temple. And the Lord turned around to him and said, no, David, I'll build you a house, a family. That's what God did. That's what's being said here. There's also another play on words as well in the Hebrew, as I understand it. Bonin is Hebrew for builders. Banin is Hebrew for sons. There's all sorts of little word plays going on here. It's building a house, building a family, building anything, building a nation. But there are some specific things about family and children here. And I think verses 3 to 5 are a refreshing reminder to a society which I think fundamentally devalues children. All right? We terminate them for social reasons in their hundreds of thousands. We delay them for the sake of our career. We advise against them for fear of overpopulating the environment. And when we do have them, we think it's because we chose to. Has our culture produced any songs about children recently? I couldn't think of any. The Bible's got a lot of songs about children. Our culture ain't produced many. Children are, look at verse 3, a heritage. That is a gift. Not of our own doing, a gift from the Lord. A reward. In those days they were deeply valuable for protection and for safety. Look at verse 4. Like arrows in the hand of a warrior are the children of one's youth. And deeply value if you ended up in court or the judicial system. That's there in verse 5. Blessed is the man who fills his quiver with them. He shall not be put to shame when he speaks with his enemies in the gate. That was the place where they carried out the law. Was it only just then though? Children are blessed. What about now? What about now? Ask anybody here who has aging parents about the influence, the respect, and the honour with which their parents were held when they were at the peak of their strengths. Ask them about all the people who were dependent upon their parents earlier in life, neighbours, friends, colleagues, people who worked with them, for them. And what of now, as they age? Where are all those who were dependent upon them then? Who does stick with you, provide and protect you in the end? Not the state. Your children do. That's why some of the folks who've got ageing parents here, we need to pray and look out for them. Now, some of them are travelling miles regularly to go and look out for them. I mean, think of Penny over there. Often away looking after a mum and dad. There's great energy to it. And she's a blessing to her mum and dad. A rich blessing to them. So things haven't changed actually that much. So children are a blessing. And I think we need to get a bit of an understanding from the Bible again on that whole front. But I've got a couple of other quotes here as well. A couple of other little bits of wisdom. This is Derek Kidner. He's a great Old Testament scholar, teacher. He says, it is not untypical of God's gifts that at first they are liabilities. He's thinking about children here. Or at least responsibilities before they become obvious assets. The greater their promise, the more likely that their sons will be a handful before they are a quiverful. let me read Charles Spurgeon again. He says this, page 32. When sons and daughters are arrows, it is well to have a quiverful of them. But if they are only sticks, knotty and useless, the fewer of them the better. So, some bits of wisdom from others there. Verse 1 speaks of building a house. Family is a house worth building. Verse 1 speaks of security. Family is a security worth having. Verses 1 and 2 speaks of working to build without anxiety, dependent upon the Lord, his building, protection and provision. Family is something worth working in peaceful and dependence on the Lord for. That's what the whole psalm says, I think, together. But then someone here says, I'm single. What of my family? Or someone else says, we're unable to have children. What of our family? Well, there is a deeper significance in the song, and it's not simply a choice between anxious independence or peaceful dependence. We can hear the echo of one of the Bible's melodic lines in this song, and it's a wonderful melodic line. And just bear with me, this won't be as long as looking at some of the other sections, but the final thing I want to draw out is the way that this psalm fits in with the absolute permanence that there is in God. Absolute permanence. See, the best example of house or family builder in the Bible is, it's obvious, isn't it? It's God. All right? Very obvious indeed. And this psalm, actually, I've already mentioned and quoted the Tower of Babel. This psalm is neatly illustrated by the Tower of Babel story. Now, we don't turn to it now, but back in Genesis chapter 11, the story of the Tower of Babel begins with man building a tower for his own glory and security, and his labor is in vain. Read on through the chapter to the end of the chapter, and man's endeavors end in fiasco. But as that man's endeavors end in fiasco, the story doesn't end there. God's story introduces us to an obscure man called Terah. And he has a son called Abram. And so begins God's endeavors to build a house. And it's a lot better than the one that was built at Babel. God promised a vast house family to Abraham. And the blessing of that house has proliferated ever since. It was reiterated to King David, the father of the man who wrote the song before us. David called his son Solomon. But the Lord gave Solomon his own special name. Now, I guess a lot of us don't remember that. Anyone remember what God called Solomon? David had Solomon. Thought, fantastic, we'll call him Solomon. And God said, that's fantastic, I'll call him someone else. He called him Jedidiah. And you might go, oh, all right then. I prefer Solomon. Jedidiah. If you're taking notes, 2 Samuel 12, verse 25. Do you know what Jedidiah means? That's right, it's right there in verse 2. Solomon's wordplay in his own name. The Lord gave to his beloved, his Jedidiah, sleep. The Lord gives to his beloved, to his Jedidiah, in his sleep. Beloved is what God called Solomon. And that clues us into big Bible themes. The blessing of God's house family goes on. Solomon was David's great son, but he foreshadowed a greater son of David. And how was he introduced by God, his father, to the world? At his baptism, the father introduced Jesus as who? As beloved. That's right. This is my beloved. He's here. This is my Jedidiah. And he's the one who sleeps in the boat while it's all rocking around in the storm. He can rest, trust in God. And when his disciples first recognized this, that he was the Son of God, well, what did Jesus say? I'll turn to it. Do turn to it as well. Keep your place there in Psalm 127, page 991. Matthew chapter 16, verse 15. He said to them, page 991, Jesus said to his disciples, who do you say that I am? Simon Peter replied, you are the Christ, the Son of the living God. And Jesus answered him, blessed are you, Simon Bar-Jonah, for flesh and blood has not revealed this to you, but my Father who is in heaven. And I tell you, you are Peter, and on this rock, that is the rock of his faith, that he believes that Jesus is the Son of God, I will what? I will build my church. He's the builder. I will build my church. And what does it end by saying there? And the gates of hell shall not prevail against it. If the Lord builds the house, the laborer's work is not in vain. Nothing can stop Jesus building his house. The Lord Jesus continues to build his house, his family, his church today. And note that he says, not you will build my church. Not missionaries will build my church. Not pastors and ministers will build my church. Not church planters. Not Gamma Team leaders. Not club and youth central leaders and student leaders. And church on a bus leaders and international leaders. But he says, I, the Lord Jesus, will build my church. And nothing will stop me. Not even the gates of hell. Literally Hades. That is death. Not even death will stop me. And he didn't. He went to his death and rose again, conquering death. And so whether you are married or whether you're single, whether you have children or whether you have no children, here is the family to belong to. Here is the family that UA and SE have joined. Here's the house worth building, laboring for it. Will never be in vain because it's the house, the family that the Lord has been building for centuries. We needn't be anxious about its continued growth and security. It's the family that's a gift, a heritage from the Lord for your protection and your provision.